The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older.
Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, only NFL podcast. One of the hosts thinks the Rams would have won if they had worn their bone jerseys, those off-white ones. I kind of like those. People made fun of them when they came out, said they looked dirty.
Yeah, they look a little weird. If you're going to go white, you got to go Bengals white, because those are the coldest jerseys, I think. And with Joe Burrow in those jerseys, he looks really cool. Mm. I don't know what kind of hoodie he had on post game, but I was just thinking, like, my confidence level would go up if that was my quarterback, whether he could play or not. Just walking like, it's cool.
Would you confident? What is the sort of formula of your confidence level? You see that jersey, but you know that he can't move. Literally cannot move.
It don't matter. We look fly. Also, I take your shirt as a personal affront. You're trying to rub it in my face that lots of teams can get destroyed in big games.
I am, for the podcast audience, wearing an Orange Bowl shirt, but it's not from the year that Dominique played, 2001. Oh.
My freshman year, I looked it up because I the beating was so bad. We lost 56-23. So Sean Payton, take that.
None of the games were neither of the games were blowouts. Like, the Eagles game felt like a blowout, I guess. But we'll talk about that. We're gonna talk about both the Monday night games today, as always. And then we're gonna take a quick break, come back and do some winners and woofs from the weekend. Speaking of that 70-point game, I feel like it must be acknowledged in some context. But before we do those things, a little bit of housekeeping. I always say housekeeping as that's like the just I'm going to tell you stuff phrase. Is there another term for that? I don't know. Going to get my ducks in a row here. Yeah, a little bit of administrative work. So this is my last podcast before I take a abbreviated leave from podcasting, longer leave.
Yay!
Some people have asked questions. I guess I should have. I don't know. I hadn't really figured out exactly. I'm going to be gone for not a terribly long time. I'm going to take a quick break back in November at some point. So please do not unsubscribe. Do not just if you're in line, stay in line. The podcast will come back. And it won't be very long, but in the meantime, of course, I would give this recommendation regardless, but especially in the absence of this show, you should check out the Dominique Foxworth Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Oh. Also the Bill Barnwell podcast, another good friend of mine, friend of the show, who he came on your podcast recently, right?
I'll be splitting my people. I mean, they all come to me. I mean, come on over here. I will give all the Mina updates that you need. Don't do both.
Get your Mina updates on the Dominique show. We'll be back. I'll be back soon. We'll be back soon. But this is the last one for a while. This is like the last bit of work that I'm doing for a while.
We gotta end it with a boom. Good energy, a lot of fun.
It is. I was hoping for better games. They were interesting games, though. I feel like both of the games, there were questions about coaching, questions about, I think, offensive line play might be like the determining factor. And well, I wouldn't say it's the determining factor in both the games necessarily, but it certainly is a very important part of why both of these games turned out the way they did. Let's start with Rams Bengals first, though. So I guess the story of the game was that Joe Burrow did play. He gutted it out. He clearly looked hampered, said after the game to the great Laura Rutledge that he didn't feel worse. So that's good for Bengals fans. But he is obviously not himself. The Bengals offense still isn't what it was at the end of last season. There was one drive where, you know, it kind of looked like things were picking up. Ja'Marr Chase made some incredible plays. He did roll out once, I think, which totally took the Rams by surprise on like a little fake pitch. And then Chase leaked up the sideline. But to me, Dominique, this was really, I mean, in terms of like the Bengals pulling it out, it was largely about the fact that the Rams had no answer for Trey Hendrickson.
Exactly. And so I was furious this morning. What a furious is a stretch, but kind of annoyed this morning because we did the highlight on Get Up and there was not one clip of Trey Hendrickson doing anything. We did the whole highlight Wow. We showed all types of stuff. And I was thinking, like, you know who this game was actually about. So I forced his name into the highlights, good, even though he didn't show any plays. But yeah, that's what it was about. I think one of the things that I think is more or slightly more interesting than what happened in last night's game. Sorry to move you off the game so quickly, but
it's okay.
The calculation for whether to play Joe Burrow or not to play Joe Burrow is really interesting to me. And I think obviously they got the best of both worlds, is they got a win and he didn't further aggravate it. And the worst of both worlds is you lose and he hurts it more. And with the season, with NFL seasons being so short, the games being so valuable, and that particular position being so vulnerable and so important, it's just a hard thing. We know Jamar Chase was advocating for him to sit out. It's just an impossible calculation to make.
He himself kind of said, I wouldn't have played if 0-3 wasn't on the line. Yeah. And that, I think, is to your point about that calculation. I don't think they would have won this game with Jake Browning. There was a point in the first half where I was like, God, this is so bad. Could it be worse? And then I remembered, I don't want to mean to make Jake Browning a Huskies fan, though. It could be worse, guys. That's all I'll say about that. Not one of those situations where you have like a Gardner Minshew type on the sideline. And I think it's not an offense where you could just plug and play. I mean, the offense would probably look pretty similar, but in terms of execution, it's not like a machine. Like, you know, it's so quarterback centric. I've spoken about this before, but it looked really bad until like that drive. The other thing that, I mean, Joe Burrow threw the ball like 50 times, which didn't really make sense to me. This is a really, by the way, all four of these games, I was confused by how each four of the offensive coordinators approached run pass balance and in different directions, which is kind of funny. But in this one, yeah, I was really surprised on the Bengals side of things, how little because they were running the ball pretty well with Joe Mixon, who looks good out there, but they were just asking Joe Burrow to sit back and sling it, which given the state of things really surprised me.
Yeah, and it's not working either.
Yeah,
so
right.
It's not only that you're putting me at risk, it's you're not having much success doing it. But I think it's probably hard to break those habits. And when you have a player like Joe Burrow, when you feel threatened, like they were for large portions of that game, you're like, you know what we're not going to do is entrust this game to Joe Mixon. No disrespect to Joe Mixon, but we have a guy who we trust who looks cool in hoodies. Let him throw the ball and see what happens. We go down. On the sword with him, or we figure a way out of it.
And they really trusted Jamar Chase to like come through in big moments, whether, you know, I mean, Riddick pointed this out, they were just moving him around everywhere, trying to do anything possible to get the ball in his hands. He was getting yards after the catch on screens. He was catching slants that were like 2 feet behind him. This was like one of those, like, I'm a number one, I'm going to take over this game, I'm going to put the offense on my back. I still don't know what the hell is going on with Higgins and Burrow, and like, just seems really off there. But Chase, he took over the game, which, you know, I think there's sometimes it's been like the who's really the number one is, you know, Jamar. I mean, Chase.
No, no one's ever said that seriously. I mean,
Higgins, also,
yeah, that's it. I mean, the best we say is he's a 1B. No one's ever really considered him a true number one. And the argument is that he could be a number one in someone else's system, which maybe. But it's really easy to put up number one numbers if you're really good and you're playing opposite Jamar Chase. I don't mean that as a slight. He certainly probably could be a number one in other system, but we know who it is. Also, you know, I love any time there's an offensive pass interference call. So shout out T. Higgins getting that call for me. Great push off.
That was such an egregious push off.
Yeah, it was egregious.
Yeah, it was so bad. I think he's drawn a few of those. He's a little bit of a pusher.
Did he have one in the Super Bowl, or was that Chase that had one in the Super Bowl? So one of them had an offensive pass interference in the Super Bowl, and I remember being ecstatic.
He's definitely had a few. It was Boyd that Witherspoon had the
I took it from him.
That's probably one of the most impressive interceptions I've seen in like the last 5 years. I don't think that's being hyperbolic, and no one will remember because the Rams didn't win and it like didn't lead to anything. Which is such a shame, because that's one of the coolest. You guys should go seriously look it up. Akilah Witherspoon, who's one of the Rams cornerbacks. It was Boyd, I think, right? He just took
it was Boyd
took the ball. He dived it while diving, took the ball out of his hands, corralled it, and it was like an on-target tight window throw, corralled it with one hand and came down with it. It was an unbelievable interception. And one of the few highlights for like a Rams team that, you know, week one, Matthew Stafford looked amazing. And then, you know, and so we were, sort of caused some of us, me, to question whether or not they were better than I thought. Oh, this offense can roll with anyone. I guess I don't want to make too much of the offensive struggles because it was so obviously on the offensive line. Like, it was just a non-functional offense. They went 1-for-11 on third down, 1-for-4 in the red zone. Stafford threw two picks, one which I think was like a miscommunication, one which was just him trying to sidearm it stupidly. McVay was asked about why they didn't run the ball more, and he did allude to like some of those being RPOs, which is an amazing coach cop out, by the way. About the video, if you asked about that, yeah. Well, it's true. It's not a cop out, but I'm not sure there's much they could have done because, as we said at the beginning, this was about the left tackle left the game, Alaric Jackson, and the dude they put in for him, Zach Thomas, had no chance. McVay, you could criticize it for not giving him help or coming up with and running away from, I don't know, but it was just total non-functional offense after that.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things that you and I, I guess to speak for myself, we analyze and watch this stuff so much and we get away from the fundamentals of football and sometimes forget that nothing works on offense if you can't like protect. And sitting next to Jeff Saturday every Tuesday is an annoying reminder of how important the big stinky offensive linemen are. So yeah, at least being bored, like functional, your offense to be functional, all your fancy designs, all your great sidearm throws, none of that matters if we can't protect you.
Yeah, that was pretty much the story of the game on that side of the ball. Yep, so moving forward from this, I do think it was a pretty important win for the Bengals. And I mean, to me, just the trajectory this season is just going to be, is Burrow going to get better on a week-to-week basis? You know, I think, you know, we mentioned Hendrickson. I thought, obviously, Logan Wilson had the pick. He's been very good for them. Dax Hill was flying around making
monster
plays. Yeah. So this, you know, I thought in the second half, too, I shout out to Big Lou for dialing up some diabolical blitzes and just drawing a circle around that poor left tackle. Okay. Eagles, Bucks. It was in Tampa. Let's start here. Eagles win pretty easily, soundly. I want to start with the Eagles offense. Do you feel better about them?
A little bit. I mean, I feel a little bit better because at least we got the big plays, the off-schedule plays. They don't seem consistent or to have a like functional, consistent passing game. They ran the hell out of the ball. The O-line was dominant. Jalen Hurts could stay in the pocket forever. And again, it seems like the foundation of a good team offensively is offensive line play. They have offensive line play. They have talent. They have on the edges. They have a track record of this success. We even saw Jalen Hurts making up stuff when the offense wasn't working. This wasn't what it was supposed to look like. It hasn't looked like what it used to look like yet this year, but it's really hard for me to imagine that they're never going to get back to that. Yeah. And say that losing the offensive coordinator is that important. Like, I understand that it matters, but it can't be that important.
I think, okay, so the run game was unbelievably dominant. And by the way, it should be noted, dominant against a good Bucks run defense. Like, this wasn't them running all over Minnesota. This was them running on a Tampa defense that has been pretty solid against the run for some time now. And... you know, I mean, not just running. I mean, I reposted that someone, I think Josh Norris had a picture of one of DeAndre Swift's rushing lanes.
Oh my!
And asked how many yards could you get? And looking at it, I was like, 3? I actually think I could get 3 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just insane what they're able to do on the ground. But to your point, you know, through the air, it still doesn't look quite right. I think, watching them, there's a few things that kind of jump out, but then this one, what really struck me was, you know, I couldn't help but think back to Hurts. Hurts has struggled against Tampa, notably in the wild card game before last year. He really struggled with the blitz. This game, Bowles blitzed him a lot, as he does, 63% of dropbacks, which would be insanely high if not coming off of the 80% Justin Herbert blitz rate, which I'll get to, or the Daniel Jones getting, like, this is a real blitz happy season. But against the blitz, he had a passer rating of 40 and a negative 9.3% completion percentage over expectation. And I think that's where I still don't feel like everything is quite right. He looks uncomfortable under pressure, not just the blitz, in a way that is a little bit reminiscent of the season prior to last. As you mentioned, when he is kept clean, he looks like, the second throw to Zaccheaus on the drive where he had the one play, which was under pressure, to his credit, he rolled out and made this amazing play. The second one, he was just like bouncing back there. Like one of those video game characters when you're waiting to choose them. And then it was a beautiful throw. Beautiful, layered it over the defender, just pearl dropping the bucket. But yeah, it feels like, okay, there's something still a little bit off with him in terms of how he is dealing with pressure right now. And it'll be curious to see how different defenses approach that.
Yeah, dealing with pressure and dealing with the blitz obviously are two different things. Dealing with the blitz, I would say, is if we're looking for an explanation, that's where coaching might matter. We have no reason to believe. Well, I mean, we have every reason to believe that Jalen Hurts is incredibly coachable and incredibly smart in football. If you give him answers, I find it hard to believe. And this is without doing specific blitz study. So I could be completely wrong. It could be Jalen Hurts' mistakes. But if you give Jalen Hurts answers, I don't imagine that he is not going to make those decisions. So, again, this is without doing the study that would be required to point fingers one way or the other. But I would guess that if we're looking for a place where a coordinator could be missed, it's constructing answers, easy to understand and easy to execute answers when you see the blitz.
I feel like the RPO game, the pass aspect of it, isn't rolling the way it was last year. Something interesting, and I think Aikman pointed this out, was the Bucks linebackers were playing the pass. So
right.
I think there were certain plays where, you know, you just, I think that, and that might be something that continues throughout the season. Like the linebackers were playing with such depth too. This was also on like a couple of, at least one play action pass. Devin White was just like, nah, I'm taking away this window. And so the Eagles ran right through it, you know, which is again, like, I bring that up to say, Dominic, to your point too, about like, do they have answers versus the blitz? And I bring up the pass aspect of the RPO game. I think when we sit back, we might see that, not that it's necessarily like that they're making the right decision to switch to run heavy game. Frankly, they should have ran the ball even more in this game. And like, it's a little bit fussy to worry so much about the pass game when they're getting like 15 yards per carry on the ground. And some of that has to do with defensive structure and who they're playing and the defense is working and their defenses are giving them the run and whatever. So, you know, I'm trying not to like be.
And they got three wins. It's too early to be concerned about them. But yeah.
Plus the defense looks good, by the way.
Yeah.
I've been really impressed by, you know, because they've been undermanned. They've had injuries, particularly in the back end, and I think they've held up pretty damn well. I mean, I do think this Bucs offense was probably a little bit of fool's gold coming into this. Talk about that in a second. But, like, the defensive line looks great. Jalen Carter looks unreal. The run defense looks much better. And, you know, they haven't exactly played a murderer's row of rushing attacks, but it still looks good, which was, of course, a huge problem last year. So, I don't know. They look pretty balanced to me thus far.
Jalen Carter, man. Yeah, he's a foundational piece, and he could be one of the best defensive tackles in football, if not the best defensive. He probably already is one of the best defensive tackles in football. Could be the best defensive tackle in football in a few years, and they got him late in the draft.
What he did in this game with the forced fumble where he got penetration, flipped his hips, and then chased down the ball carrier, that to me was like, in a nutshell, why he was such a crazy prospect. It's the movement skills at his size that don't really make sense.
And then the presence of mind for a rookie to go straight for the punch and accurately nail the punch. Like most guys, I think if they're retracing, D linemen are big, normally can't retrace with that type of speed. They're retracing. They're retracing to make a tackle. They're not retracing with like a cornerback's mindset or a safety's mindset where I'm going to punch for the ball. Yeah, he's special.
One thing I do want to note about the Bucs, you know, Baker was a bit light on some throws, had some misses, had some okay throws. I think Evans bears some responsibility. The drop in the end zone, he should have caught that. Yep. Though he made like an insane catch over the middle of the field. But I think for me, just summing up the problems with this Bucs offense, it just feels like we're in year three now of just having one of the worst early down run games in the NFL, and they cannot do it. I felt so bad. Like, imagine being Rashad White in that game, and you're watching the Eagles. You're watching DeAndre Swift on the other side running through these like wide open lanes, and you're just watching him in absolute hell. The safety, you're just like, I don't know. It's like I drove an old Caravan in high school, and I remember like when I would pull in and kids would pull next to me and like their new like SUVs and stuff, and I was just like, damn. This life's so unfair. I feel like that's what Rashad White felt like. But the thing that's so frustrating is despite that, they still do it. I mean, according to rbsdm.com, the Bucs had a success rate of 25% running on early downs, negative 0.42 EPA per play, and yet they still had a pretty 50-50 balance running versus passing on early downs. So far this season, they rank seventh lowest in pass rates on early downs. Despite this, it's lower than the Titans. So I feel like as a Bucs fan, you just have to be in absolute hell watching this team now year after year after year just bang their head against the wall. And I know there's like stuff that's happened with the offensive line, obviously, with retirements and departures and all that and injuries that is largely the reason why this happened, but it's got to be so frustrating, Dominique.
But I mean, don't all like coaches say, well, even if it's not working, you got to stick to the run. You got to commit to it.
If you're the Eagles, you should.
Yeah, it's bad. Yeah, it's bad and it's frustrating, and you can't have errors. You mentioned the drop touchdown in the end zone. There's another dropped third down conversion before that one by Mike Evans. Those are the players that you have to have because you're not going to get a bunch of chances. And when you have top players, you need them to make those plays in those moments. It may not have made a difference, but Baker's not great. So if he's going to get you the ball in an advantageous position, you're going to have to catch it. The running attack, like there's no answer. I don't know. It's been bad for a while. Maybe just some teams, just their jerseys just don't work with running the ball.
I should also mention they part of the reason the Eagles, they were able to move it through the air a little bit or a decent amount as the game went on. They lost Jamel Dean. This is a very banged up secondary. Mm-hmm. They still have really good players, but they're just banged up. It's rough out there. So in any case, the favorites both won. I think probably the biggest for Cincinnati, given what they have to overcome this season. We'll see, you know, that like I said, that really, really comes down to Burrow for me. And Eagles not panicking. Yeah, I mean, they're 3-0. This is, you know, let's take a chill pill. All right, when we come back, Dominique and I are going to pick our winners and woofs this weekend.
Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesar's Palace, all this can be yours when you bet with Caesar's Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns reward credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using code OMAHAFULL, and then place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great, keep those winnings. But if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and older only, offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only.
New users and first $10 plus wagers only. Must register with an eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss.
Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt.
receipt.
Tier credits and reward credits will be added to the account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans.
Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org.
Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee,
Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia.
If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Okay, we are back for one final winners and woofs before my break. I feel like I sound like a senior, like the last week of high school, the way I'm talking. It's not going to be that long. I don't know why I made that. That was so dramatic of me. One last winners. This isn't the last. It's just going to be a second. But I figured I had to. It's not like it's an obligation, but we do need to give one of these awards to the Miami Dolphins, but I wanted to be a little bit more specific. My winner of the week is not just the Dolphins offense, which of course, unless you've been living under a rock, you know that they put up a 70 burger on Denver. No, specifically, I wanted to give a shout to the Miami run game, which was a question mark coming into the season. Last year, despite the fact that Mike McDaniel was the run game coordinator in San Francisco, that was his expertise, they were just kind of average. They were average. The NFL average in terms of rushing EPA per play was 0.03. Miami was 15th at 0.03 last season. So far this year, they are averaging 0.25 EPA per play on the ground, which I'm pretty confident would shatter records if it held up. It's obviously just been 3 weeks, so I don't want to be over the top about it. But when you watch it, it seems very sustainable for reasons that are not too dissimilar from the passing game. In terms of the combination of play design, pre-snap motion, speed, I don't know how you stop it. It's a nightmare. And this was in the Denver game. That was kind of like my biggest takeaway, was watching both Raheem Mostert and Devon Achane. That's what he's going by now. Yeah. Just absolutely ripped them up on the ground. It was astounding.
It was fun. I think the run game was impressive. You pointed out generally how the schemes are effective. I watched all the running plays and saw a couple that jumped out to me, that kind of double end around sort of thing, where it was like it was an end around to Achane, and Berrios originally runs it.
Yes.
And that the design behind that was incredible, in part because they created matchups that were advantageous for them. So the offensive linemen kind of treated it like a screen pass, and that they held their blocks for a second on the D linemen and then pushed them through. And then they climbed up to the linebackers, and honestly, they climbed to the secondary, because what they were doing was giving Devon Achane a running start. Am I doing it right? I know it was Achane.
Every time you say it, I'm like, I'm second guessing it. It's
Achane Devon, but it's not, right?
Devon Achane.
Okay, Devon Achane.
Like 4chan, which is how many touchdowns he scored.
Well done. That's the only thing that 4chan is. And also,
not a good nickname.
Not at all. Not at all. So they're letting the D lineman through while Devon Achan has a running start. So essentially, they're like, all right, hey, are you guys fast enough to catch this guy who runs 4.3? And then they're letting their linemen get up on safeties and corners and saying, okay, are you guys strong enough to fight through these blocks? And creating that matchup, I don't know if that's how they thought of it, but it looked exactly like a screenplay would work. And a screenplay, in its best scenario, that's how it works, is you use the aggressiveness of the D-line against them, and you get your size up on the secondary. And it was just a beautifully designed play, and then run effectively also.
They are currently using motion on 82% of their runs. No team, at least since we've got the tracking and True Media, which has been for about 6 years, has ever cleared 80% in a year. It's funny to go back to the first year. The highest was the Niners, which 65%. And it's up everywhere. Every team's using it more often. But when you watch them, I think to your point there, it's always purposeful. You can always, one of my favorite things watching a Miami run play, or just Miami play in general, but like a run play, is watching the pre-snap motion. And then it's almost kind of like, okay, what is this supposed to do here?
Right.
Is it supposed to give a guy a head start, often the case, set up a block, set up a mismatch, move a linebacker one step in the wrong direction? Usually the function is to do multiple things. And it's really remarkable. I mean, it's, I don't, everything, the execution, as you just, again, is always very spot on. It feels like everyone knows what they're doing and why in the offense. But it really is the purposefulness of the motion. I mean, there was another end around where one of the wide receivers, whose name escapes me, was in motion as the lead blocker. I can't remember. Berrios or Craycraft.
Craycraft, yeah, right.
I don't know.
Exactly. It's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
It's what the Broncos defense was thinking the entire game.
I don't know what you do, honestly, Dominique. I really don't know what you do to stop, because ultimately, the net effect of all of this is it just creates an extraordinary amount of space.
Right.
This is why everyone has so much space.
If I was asked to simplify their strategy or their scheme, that's what it's not just the space, but it's, we're going to get these incredibly fast players the ball. And they're not, the schemes don't like break a defense necessarily to where you got a guy running wide open. The schemes are about getting the ball to our guys in space. If we get it to our guys in space 10 times, you're not going to tackle them every time. And if you miss that tackle, it's a touchdown. And if it works 3 times in a game, we're probably going to win. If it works 10 times in a game, we're going to score 70 points and call off the dogs.
And it's not that crazy, too. There's a lot of the concepts do look like San Francisco in terms of the zone run game, what they do with the tight ends. But then it's kind of layering one more piece on top of that, usually like one more guy in motion or faking a motion or doing a reverse or whatever. And then everybody's faster than they were. I mean, I guess Mostert was in San Francisco, literally, but it's not just Mostert. It's like, what if everyone on the field was also as fast as Mostert? And I think, to me, more than maybe, we always talk about how like football really is about like numbers, matchups, and angles. And I think the Dolphins offense lays bare how true that is, because ultimately, it results in guys who appear wide open, or in the run game, they have so much space. And you're like, how did that happen? Yeah. As a fan, it really is numbers, matchups, and angles on every play, and a combination of a coaching staff that is putting incredibly fast players in a position to manipulate all three of those things, and then they're executing it.
There you go. I was waiting. I was going to say one more word I would put in there, but it's not a separate category. It kind of the overarching category for all those things. It's execution. And I think about that in the motion, because by putting the motion in there, even if it's not giving you an advantage, it's adding an extra variable that you're not going to mess up. but it gives them another chance to make a mistake. And defense is one of the, or some of the better defenses. Every defense has a weakness. And by you motioning or shifting or switching the count on either side, you are attacking the defense and asking them to adjust. So certain defenses aren't good at versus 3-by-1. So we have double calls in some of our defenses where it's like, all right, 46 or 42, which means if they're in this formation, we'll go 4, they go this 1-2. And zone blitzes, especially on third down, motion helps a lot. Because on third down, zone blitzes essentially is like man coverage, but it's a counting system. So yeah. Outside in, I have one, this guy has two. If you're doing a zone blitz with a D lineman dropping out and you motion, his count changes. And you know what D linemen are not accustomed to doing is, I'm not going to say counting, that would be insulting, but keeping up with where everybody is positioned. And so by doing that effectively all the time, you're forcing them to practice it, and you're also giving yourself another chance for somebody to make a mistake.
And they've added this new, this is more about the pass game than the run game, this twist where with the motions, which do all the things Dominique said in terms of changing counts for defenders, you know, they don't have to bring guys all the way across the field anymore this year. They're doing it to get the head start and the angles and leverage, all the stuff we're talking about, on the same side of the field at times. Yeah. So it's really, 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 really hard to stop. One more thing about the execution, actually, I want to get at. We talk a lot about the players in motion, the ball carriers, the quarterback. The other thing I felt watching this particular game against Denver is I was really impressed by the offensive line as they were moving and pulling and blocking in space, because, you know, that's a group that I've criticized a lot, I've expressed concerns about, and their job is very different from other offensive lines in the NFL. When your quarterback throws the ball in 2 seconds, that's you're just not, you know, asked to do stuff on a lot of plays. But on the run plays in particular, which is what we're kind of highlighting here, they are executing really well. Like, and I think they do have the necessary athleticism to pull a lot of this off, which is not something I think I thought about or had considered. Certainly not last year, but coming into this season, I was thinking, I was like, so where can they protect Tua and whatever? But I didn't think about, oh, this might be a really good run blocking offensive line for what Mike McDaniel wants to do in the run game. And I was really, I mean, Armstead was a beast in this game, but like I was really impressed by the movement of some of these pullers.
I'm going to miss talking to you. Maybe I'll just call you and we'll talk football, because whatever it is about, it's something that you and I have both recognized. Whatever it is about when we talk, the way that our football brains work, I like stumble upon different thoughts than I would have had I been talking to anybody else or studying this stuff myself. But it's first time I kind of considered the idea, which like we know to be true, that like constraints on what you need to do will lead to often more creativity. So like people think that give me a blank sheet of paper and it'll allow me to be creative. When in actuality, what the most creative things come up from someone saying, well, this is all you have to work with.
Yeah.
And I hadn't considered this until now. Coming into this season, the constraint on this offense was we can't get our quarterback touched. And that's forced them to think of things that will allow them to play in a way that keeps him safe. And I think that's part of this. Mike McDaniel did not wake up 10 years ago and say, you know what the key to the offense is? It, like he's kind of
a 2 second time to throw.
Yeah. He's kind of been forced to figure it out because of the injuries to Tua.
That's to go back to the short motion thing. That's it's such a solve.
Right.
It's a solve for what like the Chargers did last year in terms of pressing them and whatnot and the way they were adjusting to their fast motion. But it's also like, it's like, okay, we know it's like a math problem. Like, you know, you have a quarterback who is deadly accurate, throws with anticipation, has great eyes, but you really can't get, you don't want him holding on to the football more than 2.5 seconds. So it's like if a train is coming at like 45 miles an hour, you know,
exactly.
And he came up, he's like, okay, great. Tyreek Hill's the fastest human in the NFL, so I'm not going to bring him all the way across the formation. I'm just going to bring him, like, you know, 5 feet or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the ball can come out super freaking fast, and it doesn't matter because that's all he needs.
Give him motion, a head start to get his speed going so he can get to the depth of the route more quickly. Yeah, Yeah, and what? I think it's a result of the constraints placed on this offense because of the Tua injury. So like, and it's go ahead.
Oh no, yeah, no, keep going.
That's it. It's not to say that all this other stuff doesn't matter, but I do think that the special thing about this offense is combining their depth of target with the time that it takes them to throw the ball. Like, it's an impossible thing and a formula that no one would ever consider prior to this, I would think, until now. Like, we need to get this done. Let's figure out how we can get this done.
And just to kind of put a bow on it, the fact that they're running the ball so well for all the reasons that we've been describing, you know, the trickery and the talent and whatever, it matters so much because let's say you run into a defense that does come up with good solving coverage. I mean, the Patriots did a pretty freaking good job, honestly, all things considered, second half. But you know, we'll see what happens against Buffalo. It's going to be a great game. Let's say you do. I don't know how you stop Bo. The Dolphins use more 21 personnel than any team in the NFL. Their fullback's on the field a lot, right? Allie Ingold. This year, the second most is the San Francisco 49ers. This year, when they're in 21 personnel, they have faced 8-man boxes 11% of the time. Like, defenses are
absurd.
Like, it's crazy.
It's absurd.
To put that at, like, the Niners, I think last year it was like 30%, you know, like, if most of the time, if an offense comes out with two running backs or running back and a fullback, you're going to stop. They're trying to stop the run. You're going to put big bodies on the field. Defenses are terrified to do that. They were terrified last year to do that against Miami. If you can run the ball at 6.5 yards per clip, which is what they're running out of 21 versus, and you're not facing stacked boxes, there's no good answer, because what you're facing now is not just an explosive offense like they were last year. And this is where I think they're different this year, a balanced offense that has a number of different answers for different things that defenses can do. It's a nightmare.
And it's not only putting big bodies out there. It's also, you mentioned this, but you didn't say it specifically, where it's about putting the bodies in the box. So if you are concerned about big plays, you're going to put smaller bodies. Even if you do load up the box, you're going to have somebody out there that can run with these guys. And even if they can run with them, they're going to try to find a way to get you isolated with them. And all you got to do is miss one tackle. And it's, so as long as their defense can hold up, it feels like it's only a matter of time until they're going to score, especially given Tua's accuracy. He feels perfectly suited for this offense, too. Like, we talk about this all the time, about how you want to build an offense around your quarterback. There's no quarterback in the NFL that does not have some skill. And it just so happens that the skills that he has are perfectly suited for what they want to do.
I was just talking to Kevin Clark about this, like, you know, this feels like a perfect storm of play caller, talent, quarterback. And I was like, what if you had like a quarterback, like, I don't know, Fields or something in this offense where like they didn't have a quick release, but they could extend. Maybe they had a big arm. It wouldn't work the way it does. Maybe it'd be cool. There'd be some stuff happening. I'm not going to say this offense would be worse with Patrick Mahomes back there.
Yeah.
But it really is what we are seeing right now is a play caller who understands his talent at quarterback and on the offensive line, even, to our point. So fascinating. I'm very curious. Maybe by the time I'm back, somebody will have solved them, but I don't know, man. I think the only way you can solve them is just score a bunch of points and try to keep up. Maybe Buffalo might be able to do that.
Hope they make some mistakes. They had some penalties, fumble the ball or whatever, some tip passes, like football happens, is what you're hoping
for. Christian Gonzalez picks off too, you know,
stuff like that.
I'll go first with my woof. I went with the Minnesota Vikings because at 0-3, it does feel like they lost to the Chargers in the cursed bowl. It was, I mean, I, you know, you never want to say season's over, but it felt like that one game was like, you know, this is one of these teams is going to walk out of here. With, you know, trade speculation about their quarterback because the woof for me with Minnesota, not just losing that game and the record, obviously you guys can look up how many 0-3 teams go to the playoffs and all that. I'm trying to like, I was watching them and thinking like, okay, what's the future of this team? Yeah. And I think that's where I was starting to feel bad. and you know, like, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison are both really good. And the offense, you know, is fine. But defensively, I was watching them and I was watching just Brian Flores just constantly, I mean, just trying to find answer, just throwing every possible kind of blitz created at Justin Herbert. And I was like, God, who are we building around here on defense? Because the guys that they drafted in 2022 aren't playing. Booth, Scene. Davenport hasn't been healthy, which has hurt them, certainly, and that's a big part of why they're blitzing. But it doesn't, I don't know how this, like, I don't know what the, how this defense can compete, honestly, in the moment. I didn't agree with Flores. Like, at a certain point, I get what you're doing trying to cause chaos, although they were blitzing and then they were playing back at the same time because he knew his cornerbacks couldn't cover. So Keenan, I was like, cool, I'll take 10 yards on every play. That's fun. Yeah. But I don't really know if they have any answers.
They don't, and yet they still probably should have won that game. And I think that's what makes it even woofier is they were the luckiest team last year, and they have been unlucky this year. And in this game, they had some fluky plays. Like, there's the tip ball interception to end the game. They had a receiver or tight end stripped of a ball to take it away. They had a cornerback with an interception in his hands that bounced off his hands into the end zone for a touchdown. So, like, that is on top of all of this. And while this is happening, Justin Jefferson, while he's limping at the end of the game, is also balling, and Kirk Cousins putting up numbers. You found Addison like a legit number two. So like that, having that happen while you also are paying for all the luck that you had last year and really having no hope on feeling like you have no hope on defense. Yeah. It's a wolf. It's a bad situation.
I think, first of all, the luck thing is crazy, 'cause I feel like part of me was like, as a nerd, you knew this was going to happen. But now I'm like, nah, this is too far. like there's a regression, and then I think they've lost like every fumble. Like I feel like the pendulum has swung too far, and now I'm actually like, actually they're not as bad as they seem.
Exactly. Which is crazy. This is crazy. They I think there was they stripped Herbert and it just bounced right to right to the Chargers. It's just a bad, and they get a stop on fourth down when what's his name? Staley is going for it, backed up, pissing off all the football, run the ball people. And they're like, yes, we can be the heroes. Nope, we're going to give it back. It just was rewatching that game, knowing what the outcome was going to be. It just was so many unlucky things, but still one play away from winning the game, which almost makes it sting a little bit more.
Ivan Pace Jr. looks good. The linebackers.
There we go. Yeah, let's build around that.
You just got to make Justin Jefferson happy. Give him the keys to the city, whatever it takes to keep him around. And I don't know. I don't know what the future looks like. I would consider taking call. I think someone told me, Phil told me that Kirk Cousins would be like an $8 million cap hit for some. He's very tradable contract, apparently.
Nice. You know who needs to be calling?
I don't think Aaron Rodgers would let the Jets do it.
You don't think so? Yeah.
Because he wants to come back. Not that he's the GM.
I mean, isn't he?
They got Trevor Siemian now. You know who? Okay, wait. Let's play the Kirk Cousins game. Atlanta Falcons. They won't. I mean, none of these teams will do it. This is silly. Yeah. I don't know why I'm going to pretend. But the Falcons are a team where...
Yeah, they could use.
They were. I was gonna do a woof for them because I'm very frustrated watching their offense right now. All right,
no good there.
Who's your woof?
Ravens.
Speaking of unlucky.
Yeah, I mean they're a injury prone bunch, and it's not just this group. Like all of Ravens history, it seems like they always are on the far end of the distribution for injuries, particularly to important players. But all that aside, that's potentially an explanation, but it's not a good enough one. You got a home game against a team that's playing their backup quarterback that's not as good as you. You got it, and you have multiple chances to win. You're having a field goal competition when you have possibly the best field goal kicker in history, and you still manage to lose that game. That's a big wolf in a division where everyone is going to matter for a team that has high aspirations. And then you compound it with the fact that we're excited. We finally got a glimpse of what the offense is supposed to look like last week. And so we're like, yeah, we're off and running. Then we show up and OBJ's not out there. Bateman's not out there. The offense looks bad. It's not good. It's just, it's a wolf for a team that you thought was building towards something. To have this happen at home is terrible.
Yeah, I think the question with the Ravens is, like, they're so injured. How much can we attribute to injury? How much, like, how much leeway are we giving them for this one? I think defensively, I'm more inclined to give them leeway. If that makes, I mean, good God, the injury list is insane, by the way. Like, it is. And even in the game, like, Ojabo gets hurt. Then you have Owe, Humphrey's out, Williams. I mean, this is bananas. They were using Hamilton as a blitzer, who was amazing. He was really good. But, like, it felt like they were, you know, there was a lot of desperation there. And I thought, all things considered, honestly, not a bad job for the defense, given how outmanned they were. Offensively, I think, is where you're like, okay, like, again, major injuries, particularly on the offensive line. I thought in this one, you're like, oh, God, like, Ronnie Stanley, the left tackle, and Tyler Linderbaum, they're center are hurt, and you talked about the wide receivers, and then they lose Gus Edwards. But I think that's the one where you're watching them and you're like, I feel like I'm still seeing some of the struggles versus the blitz and some of the issues in the past game that we've seen. And again, the injuries affect that, but you still want it to look better than this. It's a tough Lamar performance. It reminded me a little bit of some games last year where, like, there's some good things, there's some bad things. Yeah. Ultimately, he takes this terrible sack at the end and moves him out of field goal territory. He bears responsibility for that. But it's seeing him struggle, I think, with the blitz in particular is a little bit frustrating.
It's raining. The refs missed the pass interference call. All these things are true. But what does not matter is that they lost, or what the only thing that matters is that they lost a game that they should win. And I get all the injuries and stuff, and their expectations, I don't think, have changed. When you are in on a quarterback, it's like you're in your window, I would think. And I don't think their expectations have changed. While I think you can explain away a lot of the issues with injuries, I still think that this is a game that they need to win at home against Gardner Minshew in overtime. You got to.
That was a really bad missed pass interference.
Yeah, it was a bad miss.
that was like, should be a tape for what pass interference looks like. He looked him so, it was so bad in the face mask too. I don't have a sense of who's coming back exactly when, so I am really reserving freak out mode about the Ravens, but if this were the case, they cannot overcome this level of injuries. But we'll see who comes back. And the linemen in particular, I think, need to get back soon. That would help a great deal. I like your winner a lot, so I want to just move to that and wrap up here on a positive note, because this has been kind of one of my favorite stories early in the season. So,
Houston Texans, congratulations to D'Amico Ryans on your first win. And also, is it too early to say they got a quarterback? Is it premature?
No, I'm all in. I'm all good. In.
Yeah, they drafted CJ Stroud, and I would say he had an incredible game. And as you watch players, you look for something unique to say about them. And the thing that I found in watching CJ Stroud is his panic moments seem in control. And you watch him, and he's like, you see this. I couldn't think of a better word other than hitchy. You know, like when something's not open and a quarterback doesn't have an immediate answer, they get like antsy and like hitchy. They're like hitching around. And you see that happen to CJ Stroud, but he seems to find the right answer all the time. And it's not always just like, I'll check it down. He like hitches around and finds a comeback on the opposite side of the field. That type of stuff as a rookie in your third game, It's pretty impressive stuff. And I thought that their receiving core was not all that good coming into the season, but it seems like they got something in Tank Dell, two big plays, one for a touchdown. He's a quick, kind of crisp route runner, and it seems like they have something in him. They're building some. Will Anderson blocked a field goal.
That's good too. Yeah.
They had a fullback return a kickoff for a touchdown. Like, this was great game against a good opponent. They got pressure. Their D line got a ton of pressure. It was an impressive game, and it feels like it's a feel good story for this young team that no one expected much from.
There's things to like across the board. You listed a lot of them. Dell in particular looks, I mean, combined with Collins too, and like Robert Woods, it's like not only is that a very underrated, you know, I didn't seem good coming into the season, but they all fit really well together. They're all really complementary together, which I think is certainly helpful for the quarterback, but it's about the quarterback for me, man. Like, he looks great through the first three. And I talked about this when they played the Ravens because he was under a lot of pressure and I was really impressed by how he handled it. Against Jacksonville, again, backups across the offensive line, pressured on 40% of dropbacks, sacked zero times, under pressure, had went 8 for 12 for 115 yards with a plus 6% CPOE. He was excellent against the blitz. And this was the question. I mean, we knew he could make every throw. Nobody doubted that. It was all over his tape at Ohio State. But, like, I was very dubious. Can this guy come into the NFL and, you know, with the speed of play, can he not only sustain that accuracy when he's under pressure, but can he make good decisions? Can he evade sacks? Can he create? He has done all of those things. It's not been perfect, obviously. But
getting better every week.
Every week he looks better to me. The thing that, I mean, I was looking through some of his stats. This is the one that really jumped out to me. So far this season, on third down, he has 6 in QBR, 3rd in yards per dropback. So he's pushing the ball downfield. And he has the lowest off-target rate in the NFL on third down right now. To your point, like, he just looks unruffled in the gotta have it situations, which is, oh man, I feel like 3 weeks is too early to say he's gonna be a top 5-10 quarterback, but like, in terms of qualities you want in a young guy, for him to look that poised and confident and push the ball downfield like that in those situations is awesome.
What he's shown so far in a situation that no one thought was great. I think obviously we can't project forward to like Hall of Fame status, but you can look back at a bunch of other quarterbacks who are at that position now, and very few of them have had starts that are as impressive and encouraging, all things considered, of the situation, the competition, the talent around them, the experience of the coaching staff, the history of the organization. Like, there's not a whole lot that suggests that CJ Stroud should be doing as well as he's doing right now. And so, yeah, it's a big win watching that. And I'm happy they got the win, because we tend not to pay attention to things. Yeah. Unless they're winning. So I'm happy that they got a win so that people can talk about it and recognize it. But I'm sure Texans fans, I am sure that there are group chats have been on fire for a couple weeks now.
I'm happy for them.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I'm happy for them. And yeah. And they found Tank Dell. I know he went to Houston. Is he from Houston? Is a double hometown guy?
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, I was reading his bio because I was trying to, I mean, I imagine I'm the first person to be like, why is this tiny human nicknamed Tank? And I can't remember if it said anything about where
Who
he
said
was
it's
from.
Not his real name? You don't know.
It's Nathaniel is his real name. Tank Dell. I liked him in the draft. I'm not taking a victory lap here because I'm got a lot of other stuff wrong, but you know what, Dominique, maybe when I'm back in November, Texans will be in first place in the AFC South.
He's from Daytona Beach, Florida. Or he was born in Daytona Beach, Florida, which I guess doesn't mean he's from there. Oh yeah, he went to high school.
Isn't that
in
where
Daytona
everybody
Beach.
Fast is from?
Yeah, you could have guessed that. I mean, he was a 4.4, like a high 4.4 guy at the combine, I think, if I remember correctly. He looks fast as hell on the field, which is different than running the 40, but like he doesn't, like, his numbers aren't super fast.
Guess where Zay Flowers is from?
Oh yeah. He's from down there. I already know. He's from Fort Lauderdale. I saw in the I saw him giving people the business in preseason. I think I talked to you about it. He was giving people business in preseason. It was so impressive that I decided to look up his high school highlight tape, and that's when I discovered that he's from down there. It's a fair guess. It's a fair guess.
You know, the weather's good all year round. Yep. Got a lot of time to get your speed up. Okay. We don't have any more time because we're done. Dominique, thank you as always for joining me. This is always so fun. I will be texting you a lot during the season. Once again, guys, I will be back in November, so stay here, but also go check out Dominique's excellent podcast.
As a contributor, but more importantly as a fan, we love you. We're gonna miss you. Take care of yourself. Be safe, be healthy, forget about us and focus on your family for a little while, and then come back and overcommit to your job like you always do.
You know, I'll be watching the entire time.
All right, buddy.
All right. Thank you again. Thank you to everybody. Thank you to Kirsten Sobecki for producing this pod. Owen Saylor for joining us for on social today. And yeah, I'll be back in a bit. Bye.
Ten seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.